meow, meow.
Trigger
meow,
warning. Yeah.
Wait. Okay, 10 seconds. All right, trigger warning.
This is the Freedom Fiends variety broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile from sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios on the corner of Fast and Ada Vista. We alter your local thrilliest by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. Put on your glasses now. We'll warm your brain to a tasty and toasty 65 degrees. To get a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it, Michael?
Yes, I feel it.
Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Org. Yeah.
Hey.
I don't mean
to sound
so...
We through a year together.
Yeah. We did. Were you on a year? You've been on a year now?
No.
On the Freedom Fiends? No. Oh, that's right. I forgot. You were listening as a fan for like 4 years, and you were you were like yelling at your radio, pretending you were on radio with us.
I've even have like a little hair doll of you just to, you know.
That's so creepy, man. And you're in Hawaii where they do voodoo, right? That's racist.
That's exactly it. And a volcano and everything, you know. So
did you throw the hair doll of me into a volcano, and then the next day I invited you to be on the show?
Something like that. It takes that kind of thing to become a fiend. And
it does.
I'll tell you, everyone out there listening.
Yeah, all right.
Everyone out there listening, it's just a matter of time before I earn my wings here, which is called a wrestling name here.
You get a wrestling name.
Working
I think
on
you
it.
Got one. Did you get one? It's got to be something Hawaiian, though. The mongoose, the murderous mongoose, maybe.
Ooh. Huh.
You like that?
There's already Murder Dog, though. I don't want to take over into
how about the monetary mongoose, since we're going to talk about economics tonight. You like that?
Yeah.
Do they still have mongoose in Hawaii? I know that was a problem for a while.
Boy, do they ever have mongoose in Hawaii.
Yeah. You
there's
know,
like
I like
one
to
every
use...
square foot.
There's a term, the mongoose problem, and it's a really good analogy for police. Do you know the mongoose problem? Can you explain it firsthand? What is a mongoose, first of all? It's like a weasel, right?
First of all, yeah, it looks like it's obviously a long, thin predator looking like a weasel, you know. Hey,
yeah.
And then
what's the peanut gallery chiming in?
Meanwhile,
about?
You know, like just because of the hatred of mongoose, you know, the way they take down our chicken friends over here. Okay, so just everything in perspective.
Our
chicken friends.
Oh,
you know, we've got wild chickens. We feed them like people over there feed your birds. You know,
yeah,
and they're very cute and.
So we're burying the lead. So there was a problem. There was a rat problem in Hawaii at one point because originally there were no rats, and then, you know, conquerors from Spain or whatever, wherever, I don't know, Japan. Where'd they come from? Where'd y'all come from? People from somewhere else came on ships and brought rats.
Let's be specific, okay? So people brought all kinds of things over the last 1400 years, but you know, like European ships, like a lot more ships coming in.
Yeah,
that started about, you know, 500 years ago, or no, actually three and a half hundred years ago.
And Hawaii's unique. Well, it's not unique, but it's one of a lot of islands have very delicate and complex ecosystems. They also often have species that don't exist anywhere else because, you know, there's species that can't swim and it was never connected to another area. Whereas, you know, like most animals in Europe, like, exist all the way to, you know, the far other end of, you know, things exist from, like, oh, let's say, what's the left side of Europe?
No, the Spain? Left side of Europe.
That's so the southwest side.
Now we're talking about the Atlantic side, right?
Portugal. So let's say, the same creatures largely exist in Europe from, like, you know, Germany all the way to the far western side of Russia and Mongolia and China because it's connected so they can move. Whereas Hawaii is an island that has a lot of things that only exist in Hawaii. And and it's a very delicate balance, whereas in places that are connected by large land masses, it's less of a delicate ecosystem because things have intermixed a lot. And
before the commercial break, I knew how to connect this to cops really quickly.
Yeah, me too. So
you want to do it?
So real quick, we have time for the commercial break though. There's 7 minutes. I'm building up to it. You're hyper. I like it. You're usually not like this. Whatever it is, I hope you're not taking medication for it, or you keep taking whatever medication costs.
I said it was a French press.
at least poor man Speedball. If you drink that with a beer, it's poor man Speedball. So, yeah, man. So mongoose, they brought mongoose to kill rats, and all of a sudden, no rats, and then mongoose population explodes. So they brought in cats to the mongoose, and then cats became an invasive species in Hawaii. Now, the analogy with cops here is there are criminals, so you bring in cops to deal with the criminals, and the cops turn out to be more of a problem than the criminals in some ways. Boom.
And that, boom, connected.
Microeconomics. Right? Macroeconomics.
Yeah, and so that's also a principle of regulatory capture, meaning like you have the service, right? The service of security.
Yeah.
You know?
And we're going to get into that. So, you know, that explains everything. I remember reading a book called More Guns, Less Crime, and it was written by an economist who wasn't a gun person. And the basic premise of the book was, statistically, he proves that in places where there are more guns, there is less crime. Now, there's outliers in this, too, because I'd say Chicago has a lot of guns, but it has a lot of crime. I think what it is more legal guns, less crime. Yeah. Because in, because basically, like, guns in the hands of non-criminals leads to less crime. And I was like, and I asked my friend who's a government economist, guy I went to college with, who actually works for the EMF and or the World Monetary Fund and the World Bank and the what is it? International Monetary Fund. You know, the people who are destroying the world. And I asked him, like, why would a you know, economist who's not a gun person write a book about guns? And he's like, because everything's about economics. You know, even like economics can be used to explain things that don't seem to have an economic basis. So everyone should understand economics. And really, the difference between, you know, a leftist and a non-leftist is, you know, a non-leftist is a leftist who learned economics. And the difference between a conservative and a libertarian is a conservative who understands economics. And the difference between a libertarian and an anarcho-capitalist is a libertarian understands economics, but an anarcho-capitalist understands economics better. Although I found that a lot of anarcho-capitalists cannot support themselves, but there are a lot of anarcho-capitalist millionaires now because of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, which we'll also discuss in this. So I think we set up the whole show. You got something to say about cops? Go ahead, man.
No, it's just the simple thing about regulatory capture. Cops provide this monopoly service of security, right? Allegedly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you have one provider of a service, what happens? Eventually, the quality goes way down, and the price of it, the cost of it goes up. In this case, a hidden cost, right?
And there's even what's called, here's another economic term, there are perverse incentives. Perverse incentives, like for instance, cops wanting more crime, because when there's more crime, cops get more money and there are more cops added. Another perverse incentive would be, I think it was in the Philippines. There was at one point, like, you know, 70 years ago or something, they had a rat problem. So they started, you know, the government started offering like a penny per rat head. You know, for people to kill rats, and lots of people started killing rats, and the rat problem went down. And that was when a penny, you know, would buy you a meal or more, and a lot of people were too broke to eat. So people started breeding rats to cut the heads off and bring to the government. So that's a perverse incentive, which it actually ended up with more rats. Another perverse incentive connected with rats is that there is a lot of evidence that the cause of the bubonic plague, the Black Plague, the Great Plague that wiped out, you know, like 30 or 40% of Europe at one point in days of yore, was spread by fleas on rats. That's a fact. There is a lot of evidence that that is the fault of the church, of the Catholic Church, because the Pope at that time hated cats and said, cats are evil, don't have cats. So people killed all their cats and killed every cat they saw. And cats, without cats, we would be knee deep in rats that would be eating our knees while we're alive. Like animals... Cats eat tons. Cats kill things when they're not hungry. Actually, well-fed cats who are indoor-outdoor cats kill more birds and mice than ones that are like living outside and have to, you know, because they like to kill things and it's part of their...
I can confirm this.
Yeah, yeah, yours does it. Yeah, and that's a problem in Hawaii, too, because there's so many birds that are part of a delicate ecosystem. And
no, they're all gone.
They're all gone? The birds?
They're all freaking gone.
Are they really?
No, the... Yeah, like there's a variety of endangered birds, like a few left here and there. You're lucky if you see them. And then most everything else is the quick and easy to replace doves and finches and cardinals.
Which there's will never. Doves will never go extinct. You know, there's a class called of least concern. Look this up on Wikipedia, like the different classes of endangerment, like from extinct on one side to totally endangered, like kind of endangered. I forget the terms, but like, you know, the thing that is everywhere and will never go extinct are of least concern. A lot of them are things that are bred by people, like chickens are of least concern for going extinct. Pigs, cows.
E. coli is of least concern.
It's a big concern, but it is of least concern of going extinct because we all have it in our flora. My gut flora is tickling me. Yeah, so people are of least concern, too. They're a huge concern, but they're of least concern. And... yeah, man. You know, coyotes are of least concern, rattlesnakes, a lot of things that are really annoying to people, but things that if they disappeared, bad things would happen. And, you know, honeybees aren't really going extinct. They were going extinct in one small part of England, and that thing got blown way out of control. But there's a really good Black Mirror about that, where they all go extinct and they have to replace them with robot bees. Did you see that one?
Ooh, you are like the 15th person to push me in the direction of Black Mirror.
Oh my God. You know? Black Mirror is like the Twilight Zone without being cheesy, and it has like modern electronics, and it takes place in the not too distant future. And it's not a series, like every episode is its contained thing. But this episode, last one of the fourth season, they actually tied things together. They had a museum, spoiler alert. They had a museum that had like the Museum of Crime. And it had like things from all the other like other seasons in the museum. So it's a shared universe, as they say. But yeah, and the term Black Mirror is like a screen. You know, when you turn off a TV or a computer or a phone or a tablet, it's a black mirror. Black mirror. Ooh.
Very
you gotta watch it.
Potent metaphor, and yeah, apparently I must watch this.
Yeah, you must watch that. You should also watch Shameless, the American version, not the UK version. It's a comedy. It's a black comedy about a white trash family living in urban Chicago, which is kind of funny because they were going to, like, you know, put it in a trailer park in Alabama. And they're like, no, let's try this in inner city Chicago. This will be fun. And hilarity ensues. So we'll be back to talk about economics. Everything's about economics. Even worms. Without worms, there'd be corpses everywhere. It's all part of nature's balance.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride-sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store. Or go to GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Meow, 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 meow.
So during the break, you don't know that how many things Michael asks me to look up.
I know.
Google, make sure that this is safe to ship here, and that's safe to ship there. Everything's all about legalities, right?
Shape-shifting. Everything because we care about laws here on the Freedom Fiends a lot. Because, you know, laws keep us safe. So, another economic term is unintended consequences. And a really good example is prohibition. So, prohibition of anything. So, prohibition, and you say these are intended consequences, which goes back to the police want more crime because it makes more money for them. Unintended consequences, which is also the name of a really cool book that is about You'll probably get on a list for ordering the book Unintended Consequences. It's about basically like a takeover of the United States government by force. By good guys. But, you know, don't try this at home. And I do not recommend it. You know, there's very few things you can't do on FCC-controlled radio. And I used to be an FCC-licensed broadcaster in college the early 80s. Were you?
Yeah, but it was actually the early 90s for me. Cause,
you had to have the card, though, still back then? Your card carrying, was it $10 from the FCC?
Yeah, and I took a little test, you know?
Yeah.
And
wait, are you talking about a ham? No, that's a ham radio license. That's different.
No. This is college radio. It was it got up to 8,000 watts eventually.
Oh, and you had to take a test on what?
I don't really remember. Something ridiculous about
ohms and ohms law,
and procedures of, you know, when to say the call sign for the
of the station. Yeah. Was that test administered by the FCC or by the college?
It was by the general manager of the station.
But was it an FCC test or was it the college's test?
I can't remember. It was just on yellow paper.
I think that was official,
you know?
I think that was the station made their own test because there wasn't a test. But you used to have to pay $10 to the FCC to talk on radio regularly as a host. Now you don't have. Now they'll let anybody on there, but like on the back of the card, you know how like your gun license on the back of it, you know, says like, oh, you can't bring this into churches in this state without permission, or bars, or restaurants that make more than 51% of their business with alcohol, things like that. there were rules on the back of this FCC card. Phil Warmoth, who's the new Freedom Fiends host that I'm doing music with, Biptunia is our group. Really, I'm loving connecting with this guy. Like the other day, like Jeremy's like, you never talk to me anymore. Like kind of kidding, but kind of serious. So I'm like, still love you, man. But like Phil and I are just, I can't believe how cool it is to reconnect with my best friend from college, bromance, and like just be making great music like every day, you know, new stuff. And we're chatting with email when we're not, and phone when we're not making music. So yeah, bromance. But so he and I were card carrying FCC licensed DJs on the college radio station WJWK at Jamestown Community College in upstate Western New York in the early 80s. And yeah, the rules, there were three or four rules on the back of the thing. And it was like no cussing. I think there were three rules or four. No, it was four. Three rules. One was no cussing. One was you had to say the call letters every half hour and give the name of the station.
Yep.
One was no broadcasting falsehoods as news. One was no profanity? Yeah, I did. One was
is the political one, right?
One was actually no, it wasn't political. It was no calling for insurgency or violence against the government. And then one of them was that's why I brought this up because I don't think that's a rule anymore. No, it's not a rule, but they'll break down your door if you do. So free speech, yeah, right. So. And the last one was, I don't know, wear a tie on radio? No, something, I forget. But yeah, so regular. So what were we talking about? Some economic idea. Oh, unintended consequences. Man, yeah. I'm connecting all the dots. I'm like those crazy people in movies, like a beautiful mind that have the strings connecting the 3x5 cards covering the wall, or, you know, a gray state is a new one I like, or
and a photo
Fear
of,
X.
Mr. Oswald.
yeah. Or fear at. Oh yeah. I think in JFK they had the prosecutor had that, and JFK. Let's see what else. The Trilateral Commission controls my brain. The Republican Party is the Pacific Ocean, and I've got to pull out this tooth right now because there's a transmitter in it. I have the documents, people. Wait, I'm just kidding. I love that guy. So. Oh, the other movie has the crazy guy with the connected pictures on the wall with the string. Fear X, really little-known movie co-written by Hubert Selby Jr. Like every other movie made by him or about him was made from his books. He co-wrote this with the director, who also did Pusher. Good director. Guy from Denmark, maybe? I don't know. Somewhere over there. Copenhagen, yes. So we'll talk about unintended consequences when we get back. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fiction.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent, post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep, but always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback, and for the first time, on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. And of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Freedom Fiends are back. So sometimes, some of us on this radio show, we have, you know, one of us go out there and petition and write, like, in our favor for other people that we know, and that's what's going on behind the scenes. But what we were going through was missing aspects of economics. By the way, did you know what economy starts from, like, the Greek root of economy?
No.
That means the household, economia.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
It means the household. So, can you imagine something more foolish than collecting together everyone's household as if it's one household? You know?
Or the fact that governments run their economies in a way that if a household did it, they'd be living in a van if they were lucky. An unheated
if they were lucky.
Van that doesn't run.
But what if they were... Instead, like their billionaire parents were actually kind of like all trussed up and tied up and like being like occasionally being forced to sign things
tased,
for them.
Being tased.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the, you know, and then they're just living like entitled, you know, mom just doesn't care about me. I'll have to take more from her. You know, that's how I describe governments right now. All of them.
Yeah.
Gangster. Full-on gangster.
Yeah.
So. Yep.
All right. I took care of that thing. I wrote that guy. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay.
So connections are happening behind the scenes, but we keep everything proprietary.
Economics. Economics are happening. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, not everything needs to be open source, especially things that you do that are one-to-one. What is it? You know, most economic exchanges are... and conversations, anything between, you know, this is an A to B conversation. The government should see their way out of it. Yeah, like
that.
That
one.
Yeah, it's Nima Vidati's, I think. Nima Vidati, who used to be on the Freedom Fiends. He started the show, he named the show, and then he whelped some babies and got busy being a daddy, which I salute my hat to him. Someone's got to do it, so there's more libertarians. I'm just going to make them with my voice on radio. I don't have kids anymore.
How many libertarians have you made, Michael, with your, you know, like, infectious voice just reaching people?
I thought you meant with my junk. I made one kid, and the kid died of cancer, and she was a liberal when she died. And I'm not going to say, that's good, because that's horrible. And people are like, what are you saying on the radio? No, I would have made her into a libertarian if she'd lived long enough. But she was living with her leftist mother. So, yeah. Anyway,
you made it. You can like actually talk about stuff and actually maintain composure. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, interesting thing about economics was so I didn't get along with her mother really well, and her mother didn't like her to communicate with me. Her mother was a lesbian. Can you say that on radio? Yeah. So, you know, slept with me to have a kid and didn't know she was a lesbian. So she didn't want me to see the kid, but you know, like the daughter wanted to know her dad. So she contacted me and we were in touch. And here's the thing, like me, that I hadn't like sent her any money when she was alive. And the truth is, I actually secretly sent her money and didn't tell her mother.
Right.
Because it was an A to B conversation, and the mother could just see her way out of it, you know?
Exactly.
And especially when the kid was like, you know, in their 20s. So there.
So in today's modern days, when you have a kid out there, you can actually, if you know you happen to not be on good terms with your other parent, you can actually set your child up with a cryptocurrency
Bitcoin
wallet.
Yes, not Bitcoin.
And then
Bitcoin
be sending
cash
stuff over there. And you're probably going to use a GUI wallet, right? For your...
Oh, we need to get into GUI and CLI. Yeah.
Is that too soon?
That's too soon. I like the economics thing. I don't know. Let's see. Bitcoin. You know, it's kind of funny. I'm an admin on Punk Rock Libertarians, that site that has that Facebook page that has like 200,000 followers. And, you know, you post something on there and it gets like 80 or 100 comments within an hour or two. Like, it's really active page. And lately I've been posting a lot of stuff about cryptocurrency on there. And like, the pushback is unreal. It's like, oh my God, I'm leaving this page. All you guys talk about is Bitcoin. All you talk about is your magic internet money that's not backed by anything. Bitcoin's a Ponzi scheme. And just all these insane, stupid stuff that, you know what? The only people who say things like that are people who've never held any Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency. Because once you have been inoculated by the magic, that's not really magic. It's basic economics. You know what's magic about it is it's economics in the truest form, and all the economics that most people are used to dealing with are not true free markets because governments always have some hand in them. So there.
And by the way, this is a separation of coin and state pretty much for the first time in history. So
yeah.
you heard it here first, or maybe like
yeah,
last.
Yeah,
because,
you know,
actually.
I mean, like the governments want to control everything. Governments want to control your healthcare. They want to control your policing. They want to have a monopoly on your not only what you do with your money, but making your money. Now, when the government can control all those things, they can do whatever they want with it, and they can dilute them to nothing. Like, for instance, when I was a kid, a dime, like dimes were, like, I remember being like seven, you know, I was born in 64. So I remember like in 1971, like 6 or 7 years old, my dad saying, looking at some change at the store and saying, son, if you ever find any dimes from 1964 or earlier, keep them because they're worth a quarter, you know, and now they're worth like $2 or something because they were worth pretty much what money was worth in silver, and it got devalued over the years by the government. It's another way they tax you. And, you know, the government always says, like, there can't be black markets because we need to tax people. Well, they tax black markets, too, because if you are spending government money, you are, you're being taxed by inflation. Because money now is worth, a dollar now is worth 1/20th of what it was, I think, 100 years ago when they invented the Federal Reserve. And conservatives say, we need to audit the Federal Reserve. That's such a half measure. It's like a 20th measure. You know, what we need to do, and we don't need to do anything. What people should do individually is get into cryptocurrencies that are not backed by government. Now, a lot of conservatives kind of go a half measure by saying, well, I have gold and silver, and that is, you know, keeps up with inflation. And it does a little bit, although it's starting to slip because people are realizing cryptocurrencies, you know, not only can keep up with inflation, but can go up in value 50,000% in a couple years. And people say, that's a Ponzi, it's going to come down. Well, there will be corrections, but you know what it is even like PhD economists from the old school can't understand cryptocurrencies yet. They're starting to, but they can't really understand it because they don't follow the rules of like gold and pork bellies and oil prices.
It's just a completely new thing. And here's the deal.
Yeah.
It's a Swiss arm. It's like a Swiss bank account in your pocket.
In your pocket.
You can pretty much cross international
boundaries. You know who said that? Who called
probably
it that?
Probably Mr. Tucker. No.
No, Barack Obama. He said he didn't like it. He said, I don't like the idea of people having a Swiss bank account in their pocket. You know, and he wasn't like Trump. He wasn't like, we need to tax this and stamp it out and make our own Fed coin. But he was, you know, he was in his folksy kind of way of, well, you know, we're going to have to murder a lot of you, but it's going to be a good thing for the government, which is kind of how he was.
Speaking of all the poor brown people that certain people prefer to get murdered, those are the exact
Obama?
People.
Yeah, he killed a lot of brown people. Yeah.
But speaking of those people, you know what they're called in financial terms to folks like us?
The unbanked.
Yeah, that's it. Yep.
And they can be the banked with cryptocurrencies. You know, let me tell you this. This is kind of interesting. Now that I'm on that cryptocurrency page on Facebook called Anacrypt 2 Crypt. What is it? Crypt
Anacrypt hookers, version 2. Yeah.
Hookers, coke, and Lamborghinis or something. Since I've been on there, I've been getting like once or twice a day, I've been getting a friend request from someone in Africa. They want to be my friend.
Going a little nutty with who gets in, huh?
They used to let anyone in, but Virgil.
Oh, okay.
They used to let anyone in, and Virgil like has like there were like 25 admins. I was one of the first admins, but he won't let people admin. So like the 25 admins combined have less power than one admin on most sites. But suddenly he's noticing like all what he calls the immigrants, which is kind of funny because he's an immigrant. And I like that. He's being tongue-in-cheek. But he's like, all these darn immigrants coming in here and ruining our group. I'm going to start kicking people out and vetting and blah, blah, blah. And don't let any cops in like someone did.
By the way, this is the third segment of Freedom Fiends, which is brought to you by Cell 411.
Yeah, I was just going to get there. Thank you. Cell 411 is a great app that's free, that's made by Virgil, that you can get for Android or iPhone for free from getcell411.com or from the respective repositories run by Apple or Google for those phones. And it's a great app. It replaces the state, kind of like so cryptocurrencies on your phone are your banking that replaces the state banking. And then Cell411 replaces police and firemen. It's going to build the roads pretty soon, but it's not doing that yet. So basically, Cell411, you set up cells or groups of people. You know, like they always say, like, disconnected cells capable of operating without central control. You know, when they're talking about terrorists. But it's not for terrorists. It's for good people. I guess
I'm looking for you on Cell411, but I can't seem to find you.
Well,
I'm too far away.
I'm not going to add you because you probably can't come help me if I'm in trouble because you're in Hawaii.
I could spiritually help you.
Okay, I'll add you right now on Cell411.
Thank you. You see, sometimes when you need help, maybe your car broke down, or I don't know, Michael couldn't just he couldn't.
Or you're being detained. Yeah,
he's being detained.
Yeah.
You know,
and so I can't detained by snow. Yeah.
so it's like basically instead of me going over and shoveling Michael's driveway, I'm deciding to just change my profile on Facebook to like a snowdrift or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that.
So we're burying the lead. What does Cell411 do while I add you on Cell411? You explain it.
So what it does is you have like just an app that you could quickly touch a couple times and send a message to the specific people that you want to say help, instead of typing out laboriously a text message to each of them. You can already set up a little group. Like I have a few groups set up. Like if I get in car trouble, that's my biggest danger here. My car breaks down. I'm going to tap it a couple times and send the message instantly to several of my friends who live nearby. That's just really common. I could actually send a video if something really crazy was going on. Like I had an unknown person or crazy neighbor showing up wanting, as this happened, to sort of come over and trap all the chickens over here. I could
Hawaii,
take a video
hashtag,
of that.
Hashtag Hawaii problems.
Hashtag Hawaii problems. So it's a way of keeping everyone accountable. I could send a video, a still picture. I could
audio,
basically
video.
Basically say, hey, this is my thing. Thank you, Virgil, for making Cell411.
Yeah.
Great app.
Yep. Yep, and
we'll
Virgil's a good example of, yeah.
He is, yeah.
We're out? Okay. We're almost
well,
out.
Well, no, Virgil's a good example.
he's a good example, yeah. Yep, he came to America with $100, and we'll tell you later.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This is Michael Dean from The Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agrist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agrishosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime, or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agris Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agrishosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agrishosting.com.
Bert Grenard. Who calls him that? Who calls him that, Insider Baseball?
Shout out to Bert Grenard.
Who calls him Bert Grenard?
Project.com.
Did you say that on radio?
Yes.
Yeah. I said a soft cuss tonight. All right. Because I was upset about the parenting relationship I was once in. I've blocked that lady, actually.
No longer, huh? Denied?
Yeah. 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 All right. So what? What happened? Who's doing what now? Oh. Oh. Yeah, I want to talk about people that think crypto is a Ponzi scheme, that think Bitcoin and the other 1,500 cryptocurrencies, including Bipcoin, B-I-P coin, which I created, which I kind of created as a joke, but kind of just to see if we could create a cryptocurrency. It's like it actually has gone up like 1,000% in the past 6 months. So even the joke cryptocurrency, not saying anybody can start one and it'll do that. Most fail. But it's still humming along, man, over a year later. I'm proud of it. All right. So
people who think it's a Ponzi scheme usually don't know how to define Ponzi scheme?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So a Ponzi scheme. Define a Ponzi scheme.
I didn't claim that I can define it.
Oh, okay. Ponzi scheme is named after a guy, I think it was John Ponzi in the 1800s or something, who did this thing, which has since been outlawed to protect people from their own good or something. So Ponzi scheme, the idea is you invest, and the guy promises huge returns on the investment and gets lots of people to invest. And the first bunch of people that invest get huge returns because they get money from the second tier group of people that come in. And then the first group of people like just go out shouting to everybody they know, hey, I got huge returns. And then tons more people come in and people keep getting huge returns and the people running it take some off the top. The thing is, they say that this is bad for people because when it ends, somebody gets left out. However, the reason Ponzi schemes usually end is because the government end them. So maybe without the government, Ponzi schemes would make money for people forever. Actually, they're just kind of redistributing wealth. But anyway, doesn't commerce just do that? But with natural forces of the universe and of commerce rather than the government picking winners and losers. I mean, really, you are redistributing wealth when I sell you an apple for 50 cents because I'd rather have the 50 cents and you'd rather have the apple. In a true free market, both parties feel good. Although there is a saying, A good useful negotiation is one where both parties feel ripped off, but that's just kind of an old joke that, you know, should probably have three parentheses around it or something. But
you know what, ooh, I got here is I got the page called Ponzi Scheme on Wikipedia, and then under there It says similar schemes, and it lists
pyramid.
Cryptocurrencies have been employed by scammers attempting a new generation of Ponzi schemes.
Oh.
For example, misuse of initial coin offerings.
Oh, so that is true. There have been Ponzi schemes that involved Bitcoin. Or other cryptos.
Yeah,
especially with ICOs, which are initial
Bitcoin
coin offerings.
But yes.
Yeah, yeah. There's actually like the first person to ever go to jail before the Silk Road for anything connected with Bitcoin. It was a guy in Texas who I think was arrested for running a Ponzi scheme, and I think he really was. I mean, you could do a Ponzi scheme with Chuck E. Cheese tokens if you wanted, but with anything. So that's not really anything against Bitcoin. I mean, people do Ponzi schemes with money. Should we outlaw money? Well, they're trying. And they're probably going to replace it with FedCoin at some point where they can.
Well, at some point when we switch to a resource-based economy, then, you know.
That's such insider baseball. You're making jokes about, what's that thing called?
Jacques Fresco's The Venus Project and, of course, the Zeitgeist Movement, you know.
Yes,
those who
which
want
is
a resource.
A schism. A schism. Which basically is a bunch of people who are too broke to buy a new computer running it. That guy had like a broken laptop for like 3 years and was complaining. Like, laptops are like $200, man. And he's like, I need donations. Like, for years, he begged for donations to replace like his broken He kept having problems with his webcasts. You know, but there are people who understand economics better than everyone else, but they don't have any money. And their idea is that, like, robots will do all the work, and then we'll just sit back in an island paradise and smoke kratom. Oh, that's another unintended consequence. So there's this drug called kratom, which is legal. Most people hadn't heard of it until last year. The government tried to outlaw it, and now it's everywhere. That's an unintended consequence as we go to the market of any prohibition. It doesn't make less of it. It makes more of it and drives the price up. Like, prohibition of marijuana has led to more production and smuggling of crystal meth, cocaine, and heroin, because you can get much more profit from a smaller amount that's easier to smuggle and it doesn't smell as much. So thanks, government, for bringing very cheap, powerful, and then banning heroin has led to fentanyl, which is even cheaper and more powerful and easier to smuggle. It can be mail ordered from China, from actual companies.
I smell that was intentional, by the way.
I think it was too. Yeah, because the more people die, the more people scream, we need more laws and police.
And that sounds profitable, allegedly.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll be back.
Yeah.
Hour two.
I love the Freedom Fiends, but in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends. We are back, triggering you with the most delicious diet of worms the central scrutinizers will allow. We tip every sacred cow and every Buddha on the road to rattle the infantilized masses into existential crisis. Trigger warning, this is the Freedom Fiends.
Yeah.
Brought to you by Bipcot, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone who is not a government agent. Learn more at bipcot.org.
I got some really sage advice for you that's insider. It's like convoluted layers of hypertextual, concentric parentheticals from what you just said.
Is it going to affect my, you know...
Your what?
Credit rating?
Yeah, here you go. If you meet Satoshi in the road, kill him.
Typical.
Okay, that's the show title right there.
You meet Satoshi.
So what does that mean? No, that none of that means
Satoshi Nakamoto is the pseudonym
Satoshi Nakamoto,
or alleged person that created the white paper leading to the formation of Bitcoin, the network of this decentralized blockchain asset and movement of everything. Basically, that mathematics that is now so valuable, you know, $13,000 per Bitcoin. Yeah. 13,000
down from 20. Wasn't it 20 for a moment?
It hit, you know, 20s moments for sure. You know, I mean, still,
Virgil made $500 betting against Bitcoin. Yeah, we had a bet. We had a gentleman's bet with crypto. I should just shut up. I don't know. This probably gets in trouble. I don't know. But there was a bet of like what the price of Bitcoin would be at midnight on New Year's Eve, and Virgil won because he bid against Bitcoin. He had the lowest bid, and I had the highest bid, and then someone bid. I said it would be $25,000, and then somebody bid $25,000 and 1 cent to try to outdo me. But, you know, to get everything above that covered. Yeah, and Virgil said, like, I don't know, $14,000 or something. So he won because it was 13-something.
Nice.
Yeah. But I paid him in Dash, and he hates Dash, so there. I bought Dash to send him a coin he hates. All right, no, I'm kidding. Sort of. All right.
Yeah, these things are like football teams to some people, by the way.
Oh,
these are,
they're religious,
you know,
about it, yeah. Yeah,
you know?
It's kind of funny because When I got into Bitcoin 5 years ago, when the Freedom Fiends started selling, you know, buttons, like we used to sell a pack of 10 buttons that we now sell for $10. Like we used to sell that for a quarter Bitcoin. I'm not going to talk about if I have any of that still or not. That's my business. Oh, yeah. HODL. Hold Bitcoin quietly. Hold anything quietly. Like, you know, I'm not going to buy a Lamborghini ever. You know, when I had enough money for a Lamborghini, if I ever did, or maybe do or don't, but I would buy, you know, 400 acres in Wyoming and a King Cab Ford truck. I'm not going to buy a Lamborghini. I want to be left alone. Lamborghinis get you attention. I don't want attention. Yeah, I want attention for my art. That's it.
So I'm basically trying to buy like something nice and simple, like a Romulan cloaking device. Something
an island.
To really shield me. Over
a Romulan cloaking device. Well, you know, the reason we're on radio... Everyone's going to turn it off right now. The reason we're on radio, my theory is that, so we, you know, this does broadcast into space. We're on one station, it's 93,000 watts FM. That does get into space. And I think that the signals have already gotten to Alpha Centauri, 4.3 light years from Earth, with the closest possibly habitable planet in the Goldilocks zone, which means not too cold, not too hot from its star.
They're like trying to figure out you and Nima's like exact relationship. Like, based on the context of
Like, they think Nima's still, like, in the same room with me or something.
Right.
Yeah, because they're receiving the ones from... We got on air about little over 4.3 years ago, like 4.8 years ago now. So they've, you know, and I think they've been... They're like, we've been listening to this planet for 100 years. This is the first intelligent life we've heard. Although I Love Lucy was kind of fun when it was a radio show. But, yeah, she's from my town, Jamestown, New York. But, anyway... She lied, though. She'd lie and say she was from Montana because it sounded more interesting.
Her daughter lived at the bottom of my hill back in New York.
Wow.
Yeah.
Neat.
Lucy Arnaz Jr.
She's 98. How old is she? Junior. Oh. Come on, man. Desi's brother, Lucy Arnaz Jr. All right. So anyway, let's see. Where were we, Desi Lou? We're talking about people. Oh, people that don't have crypto. Here's my theory about people that think that, like, I mean... When I first got into Bitcoin, the only people into it were libertarians. You know, I got into it because Ian Freeman was into it. Ian Freeman actually got Bitcoin Jesus into it. Did you know that?
Ian Freeman got Roger Ver into Bitcoin?
Yes.
That's really fascinating. I mean...
Yeah, and Ian Freeman didn't believe in it at the time. He's like, Roger, you like crazy schemes. There's this thing called Bitcoin. You should check it out. And, you know, Ian wasn't into it yet. And then
Freeman leads.
Roger bought.
Is, right?
Who? What?
Ian Freeman. Huh? He's one of the talk show hosts on Free Talk Live.
Oh, yeah.
Just
Inside Baseball. Yeah, he's one of our he's one of our label mates here on Genesis Communications Network. And he is a good guy who basically helped get the Fiends onto radio. Yeah. Yep. So,
and he
said, here's how it happened. Here's how it actually happened, how we got a radio. So this was a podcast with Nima Vidati for a long time. And for a short period of time, Free Talk Live were on Sirius XM satellite radio, which is really cool. Because they used to always get calls from truckers when they did that, because truckers are like one of the main markets for Sirius, because it's the only thing that's like, consistent all across the country, you know, like it doesn't change stations, so they like it and they can pick their own, and they have really narrow stations, like the, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers fan station, you know, like they can be that narrow casting instead of broadcasting. And they had a Liberty, or, you know, like a, it was like libertarian, like a, I think it was the conservative channel or something, actually, but they were on there for a minute, like maybe 6 months, and they were no longer on it. Like somebody got fired, or somebody took a job over and was like, what is this crazy stuff? Get this off of here. We want to have Carrot Top in this spot or whatever. And so when they were on there, like I said to Ian, because we're on his streaming network, LRN, we still are. There's people listening on LRN.FM, and let's do a shout out for LRFM, LRN.FM, LibertyRadioNetwork.FM. You can listen to us streaming on there if you are away from the radio sometime on vacation or something. But so
Seriously, try that out. Yeah.
So I kind of like pulled on Ian's coattail and said, hey, can you get us on Sirius satellite radio? And he basically said, it's really hard to get you on there, and you have to have numbers. Like, you have to be able to say, like, we have, you know, sound scan proof of, you know, I don't know, what's it called? Those people that have the monopoly on determining how many people listen to a radio show.
Like the Nielsen numbers?
Is that, yeah, like Nielsen ratings.
For television
yeah,
watching.
Like, no, there's one
Nielsen
for
rating system.
Arbitron is for radio. Yeah, and like, you know, Free Talk Live, like, have those numbers because they're on stations that subscribe to that. And, you know, but he said, well, I can't really get you on Sirius. It was kind of a fluke we got on there, and they wouldn't put you on because you don't have Arbitron numbers. But what I'll do, you know, kind of the consolation, not the consolation prize, but the, like, the, if you do this, then maybe they'll, you'll have numbers and you can also get on Sirius. You know, I could try to get you on radio. And I think he did that to make me go away and thought that it wouldn't happen. And he, you know, introduced me to the head of GCN, who's not there anymore. And I said, and I'm not saying GCN's like minor league or anything. I'm just saying that, like, you know, to get on another kind of radio, you have to have numbers. It would work the other way too, probably, maybe. But so Ian introduced me to GCN, and, like, you know, the guy wrote back CCD and it said, well, we don't have any openings now, but send me a demo and maybe I can get you on in a year. And he did, and he said, I like it. Maybe we can get you on in a year. And I kept, like, writing him once a month, like, hey, we're still interested, polite, you know, reminders, and we finally got on. I'm not saying Ian was saying, go away, kid, but I really think Ian thought it was a long shot. But he was nice enough to make the intro, which is very cool. So, yeah, if you meet Satoshi in the road, kill him. So, if you meet the Buddha in the road, kill him is a famous saying about if you meet the Buddha in the road. And it's not actually saying, go kill Buddhas. It's saying that, like, the Buddha is inside you. If you meet someone claiming to be Buddha, he's false.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And there is,
so if you meet Satoshi,
anyone who really is Satoshi Nakamoto is not going to be out there claiming that. It's just not going to happen.
Right, because they'd be kidnapped by governments and mafias and thugs and held for $10 billion ransom.
How much is Satoshi Nakamoto's alleged wallet's contents?
Like $2 billion with a B dollars now, I believe. Yeah, because he minted the first Bitcoin and he's not touched them.
Right.
Which is unlike everyone else that pre-mines, who, you know, pumps and dumps it. Although I'm not against pre-mining coins, like, but if you are open about it, a lot of people aren't. Like, Dash was secret about it and said it was a mistake. But
how can you trust,
like,
you know, a coin where you don't know the inventor of it?
I know, that's what people say too. But here's my theory about all the people who've never touched Bitcoin, don't really know what it is, don't know what cryptos are, and say ridiculous things like tulip bubble. Which was actually, the tulip bubble is something in the Middle Ages that lasted for like a year, and where tulips were worth more than a house. But this has lasted for 9 years, going on 10, and it's a major economy, and banks are getting involved, and governments are trying to stop it, and it's a threat to the system. It's not a tulip bubble. Here's my theory about people who hate Bitcoin, okay? Those of us with modest hodlings, which is what we call holdings, that's a whole other story, hodlings, in 5 years, those people, like, the crypto we have is going to be worth so much, even if we have, like, you know, let's say you have enough crypto to buy a car or two right now, like, not even a Lambo, but, like, you know, a new Ford or something. I'm not saying I have that, but if you have that, now, even if you have enough to buy, like, I think if you have enough to buy a beat-up Pinto that runs, I think in 5 years, you're going to be so wealthy that the people who are bashing Bitcoin now, who never got in, are going to be homeless, living in cars, and they will come over and, like, clean your house for an amount of crypto that's currently worth about 2 cents. I mean, clean your house for a year, for, you know, and, like, service you in every way.
I used my Dogecoin just to pay for this new service.
Yeah. Yeah, I have one Doge, and that'll be enough to live on, to retire on. Not like a king. Not like a king, but, you know, one Doge will be enough to live on for the rest of my life, I think. I'm exaggerating, but I really think these people are going to be sorry, is the moral of this story. Because
I think envy is just so...
Yeah. Popular. It's envy, too. It is. It's, well, the thing is, too, like, a lot of these people know that some people have gotten rich off Bitcoin, but they think it's only, like, the Winklevoss kid. They don't know that it's, like, you know, I mean, I know, like, 10 people that are millionaires from Bitcoin. You know, 8 or 10 people. Yeah. And they were people who, like, told me to get involved in it, and I did, and then lost my password. And then started over later, but way earlier than most people.
You're still
so, yeah,
early
it's,
adopter.
It's weird, though. Real quick, though. It's weird now because it's not libertarians anymore. It's like normies coming into our world, which is cool, but it's not. Yeah.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's B-I-P-T-U-N-I-A. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha. Biptunia.com.
Yeah.
So, Freedom Fiends. You know, we have an app. There's a Freedom Fiends app. There's several apps, but if you go to Google Freedom Fiends app, and there's nothing for iTunes anymore. There was, but it costs $500 a year to keep an iTunes app alive. It costs zero to keep. Well, it actually costs $99 to keep like 20 Android apps alive.
20. You buy 20 app powers at once, huh?
No, you can have unlimited, but I have 20. It's basically so it's $25 for life to have a Google account app, you know, to have apps up there. And it's $100 a year to do that for Apple. And the company I do my third party at, like, the, you know, I don't know how to program, so I use this point and click kind of company. You still have to be smart, but I make these kind of simple apps, and I have about, I don't know, I like 12 of them maybe. I had 20, but I let some expire because they're stupid and no one liked them. But we have about 12 active ones, and one of them is Find G.G. Allin's Grave, which can help you find the unmarked grave of punk shock rocker G.G. Allin, which they removed his gravestone because people made pilgrimages to pee and fornicate on it in the Catholic cemetery where it is. So I made an app. I'm not recommending you pee and fornicate on his dirt nap spot. But, you know, I just think information should be free. And I don't like the idea of someone removing it. So I made an app that gives you door-to-door directions, and it's free. But, yeah, to the place I was doing iTunes apps costs, like, I don't know, $260 a year or something to keep one app alive, and it's double that for two apps. Might have been more. I think it was 300 a year. It was 160 the first year, and it's 300 after that. And if you stop paying that fee, your app stops working. Whereas the Android apps I've made, if I stop paying the $99 a year for all the apps, it doesn't stop working. You just can't update them. So Android is better. You know, iPhones for the beautiful people who have more money than sense. Yeah. But
yes, and that's S-E-N.
Do you play?
S-E, sense.
What? Fiends. Oh, Fiends. Sense. Yes.
Not S-E-N-S-E.
Yes. Yep. So I have a new song out. I have a new song out. It's going to be the first song on the third Biptunia album. The album's going to be called Open Knife Night. And the song is called You Lie All the Time. People who, like, are old are going, what? Open Knife Night, You Lie All the Time. You can't dance to that. That's not Herman's Hermits. All right, so, but, you know, it's the kids. These kids today, they like
weird. How do people
music.
Listen to Biptunia?
You go to biptunia.com, Bravo India Papa Tunia.com, or you go to Freedom Fiends, click on the player link on the top right, and or you go buy it on Android or iTunes or Apple, or you can listen on Apple Music or Google Music if you have a subscription, but you can stream it free on the Freedom Fiends site.
Your band has an app that plays your band's music? No. That would be
no.
Cool,
we have a like on page player. It's not really. It's not a freestanding app, but it works on Android and iPhone. So as long as you have the website loaded. So wait,
just curious. Just did we cover every bit of the economy and economics?
No. We're going to get back to this. This is a side issue because you talked about drums during the break. So this new song, first of all, it has an economics line that's interesting that I wrote 20, 30 years ago when I was in a band that was signed to Warner Brothers. And the line is, I got 6 cents in my pocket. People tell me I'm a star. Because that's, you know. And there's a line in here that's kind of inspired by, like, by the Warner Brothers deal we had, which is a really bad deal for a major label that our attorney described as a 1965 Motown deal, which means, you know, label gets everything, artist gets nothing forever, sign here, which is actually a step up from what I'm describing in the song, which is the analogy of the old black bluesmen in the 1930s and how they ripped them off. And the line in the song is, well, they put me in some city hotel with running water and electric light. They gave me money and a woman, said that I was doing right. They said they'd pay for every song. I sang them every song they knew, every song I knew. They put their wires back in their suitcase. The words I sing were true. The woman took my money. My wife sits staring at the wall. My song is on the radio. I'm drunk and I don't care at all. And that's kind of what it was like being on Warner Brothers for me. But whoa. Yeah, it's a deep song. It's like a friend of mine said it's like Dylan, but better. And it's cool. I think it's kind of Dylan-esque. But it's co-written. I wrote the music, and I wrote 90% of lyrics, but 10% of lyrics, and some of the best ones, were written by my friend Richard Carse, who was killed by the police in 1991 on July 4th in whoa. Florida. Yeah.
How in a old domestic did you make dispute. It to?
40, or 41, I think. Yeah. Sorrow Trail. Yeah, horrible situation. But
good news is, if you're listening, you survived.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
The reason we meow is we're speaking in Morse code to our home planet.
I mean, if you're listening to this, I'm hoping that you're like me. I can turn my head back around and see a kitty curled up asleep on top of the you know, this nice Ethernet cable that leads to the
Well, he's putting his kitty feet on the media, and that is the name of my company, Kitty Feet Media.
Kitty feet.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about drums. Like, you asked me if I play drums, and I said, not very well, but I can if I have to, and I play everything else. I play any keyboard or stringed instrument, pretty much, but I'm not a virtuoso on anything, but I make better music than a lot of virtuosos, because I'm a really good musician without being technically really good, which is actually a thing. Like, there are people who can play incredibly complicated music written by other people, but they can't write a memorable song. And they can't,
like,
you know.
Prince? No.
No, Prince could write memorable songs. What are you kidding? He was a great
I was kidding.
Writer. No, I'm talking about, like, a lot of bedroom guitar players that, you know, sit around and copy Steve Vai licks note for note, or Satriani licks, or, you know, Paganini violin licks, but, you know, they can't sit down and write a memorable three chord A B song with a hook, you know. And I can do that all day long in my sleep. I've written hundreds of songs that are earworms, that, like, you hear them and you just can't stop hearing them in your head. It, where you're like, you're singing along with it before the second chorus comes up, or even before the first chorus ends. I don't know why I'm not famous. Probably because I'm not particularly cute, and I'm kind of a prick. Yeah. And was, you know, I thought the way you were supposed to treat record company people was the way Jim Morrison would have, which means, like, insult them and show them your penis. So There you go.
Well, that's because his dad was an admiral, you know.
Yes. Yes, that does it. Yes.
Yeah. What is this with this? All these musicians of the 60s and 70s whose
parents that book. And such... You're going to talk about that book.
No, I'm not even going to mention it. You know what?
Say the name of it.
It's just a coincidence.
Don't bury the lead. Say the name of it.
Strange Things in the Canyon by Dave McGowan. Okay.
Yeah.
Strange.
Yep.
Nah. Strange Tales from the Canyon. That's it.
Yep. Yeah. That's it. That's all we're going to say.
Canyon. Done.
Nope.
Done.
I'm done. Nope. We can't talk more. We'll get in trouble. The CIA will give us an overdose of LSD and turn us loose on a freeway.
Look, there's only so much time left. Can we save Liberty for this year?
Like, okay. Well,
right now?
I'll just say I'll finish up music. Drums are dumb.
Okay.
Get a MIDI controller. Anybody that's still playing drums is like someone who uses a horse and carriage because it's, you know, the cool way it used to be done. That's what I think.
They have too much spare room in their house.
Yeah.
If you have a drum set.
There you go. Yeah, and you hate your neighbors, and they hate you, probably. Unless you have your own island. So,
yeah.
I want to talk about the economics of pleasure, and then we'll get back to the economics of economics. Huh. So, do you know why people like sugar?
It's this stimulating thing, you know? It starts off in childhood, and then you got this childish memory thing, right?
Right.
You know, what's the real answer?
No, okay. The real answer is evolution is the reason most people like sweet things and most people are afraid of snakes.
Because?
So basically, because there was a time when people were hunter-gatherers when, you know, you had, like, there wasn't Wikipedia to tell you what plants were. You couldn't go in a store and just buy food. You had to forage for food, and you had to listen to your elders of what food was good, because there's no written record of what was good. You know, I'm talking primitive man, like 50,000 years ago, 100,000 years ago, more, you know, longer ago, back to the common ancestor or the, you know, genetic Eve, as they say. But so basically, people that liked things that were sweet survived, and people that didn't died off. Because people that liked things were sweet would eat things that had glucose or fructose in them, which would give them energy to live and to develop a brain that could think, you know, better.
And the honey, you know.
Just, and the honey.
It's good for you.
And the psychedelic honey. Yeah, so... Those are things. And the reason most people are afraid of snakes is because people that weren't afraid of snakes died off, you know, so that died out of the gene pool. And, you know, that's pretty much true with most things. But then there's things like, why do most people like narcotics, which will, you know, probably kill you if you keep taking them and have an unlimited supply, maybe.
Well, we're going to touch on what's pleasure tropic, you know, why the direction towards pleasure.
Yeah, nah. I think that's another way of weeding out the weak, because I think a lot of smart people die of drugs, and a lot of dumb, even more dumb people. I don't know though. I'll say I've been to NA meetings, and in general, they are not as smart people as people in AA meetings. I don't know what that means, but maybe that's got something to do with the government, and, like, you know, government catches the stupid people and makes them go to NA. I don't know what it is, but I'm not bashing narcotics. I had my run back in the 80s and early 90s. But I think that it's another way of weeding people out, weeding out the weak, because I think that smart people that are crafty get off drugs before it kills them, generally. And I'm not saying, like, you know, I know that, you know, NA and AA teach you that you may think you can outsmart this, but you can't. It'll kill you. And it probably will if you keep doing street dope. But I think if people could, you know, I mean, people that chew cocoa leaves don't die. They actually tend to live longer and have more energy and more brain power. And probably
it's a food.
People. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, South America.
Yeah, in South America, like, you can buy coca leaf tea that contains enough cocaine to give you a little buzz, and people drink it like coffee. Whereas in those same countries, powder cocaine is a felony that's a worse felony than here. Yeah.
Pretty much. And they just, you know, actually buy whole bundles of it. But here's the thing, you know, can I pretend I know something about rats and testing on narcotics and addiction?
Sure.
Okay. So here's this little story here from my memory. They basically had a whole bunch of rats that were in
the rat
kind of
do cocaine
standard,
until it dies.
Well, yeah, if they're in this unstimulated place, but then they made these awesome little rat amusement parks with female and male rats, and they would like be places for them to play and have sex
and party.
And those same rats who had access to various types of drugs did not use them. Because they did not need to.
See, whereas with people, I think most people would use them in moderation and have fun. I when I heard that, I kind of wonder if that's a stilted study. Because that study was also like incredibly quoted by libertarians to bash 12-step ideology. And a lot of people don't understand 12-step ideology. Even Tom Woods, of all people, like Tom Woods, one of the smartest people about economics and cause and effect, had a guy on his show that was like a Hollywood psychiatrist and addiction counselor to the stars in Beverly Hills. Boy, that guy doesn't have any incentive to badmouth NA, does he? Yeah, he does. He has an incentive to badmouth something that costs nothing or maybe a dollar in the basket for coffee when he's charging $500 or $700 an hour to try to do the same thing. You know.
Hey, but, you get what you pay for sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I'm not a huge fan of NA and AA, but it saved my life. And you know, people that are haters say, "Well, you know, what saved your life was hanging out with other people with a common goal of staying clean." And I'm like, I don't know, because I've like tried to quit drugs with roommates before. Back, you know, I've been sober for 20 years, but 20 since 94, whatever that is.
It's impressive. You know,
yeah, like I tried to quit with people who had a like-minded goal, and we always relapsed. But in NA and AA, I was able to get clean, and I wasn't religious. And my only problem with it, and this is a good point, is that Jim Jesus taught me this, is that they make it sound like science and it's not science. Like they have steps and they have an order the steps should be done in. And I'm pounding my hand with my fist right now. They have steps that you have to do in order. But people that do the steps in order tend to get sober and stay sober. So there. And it's so maybe it's voodoo, but maybe it's just pop psychology and religion and voodoo and trust and faith in something all mixed up and applied on confused people who believe it. But hey, they're not dead, so I don't care.
It's the spirit. It's the Holy Spirit that flows within people that allows them to break free of addiction, right?
Maybe. That's what they say it is. Although, you know, they have a chapter to the agnostic in the AA Big Book, but it's basically just substitute something else until we can convince you to be a Christian is the plan of that chapter.
Allegedly.
But hey, so economics. So, yeah, I think that there is an economics to evolution. And, you know, even if you believe in God and believe in creation, you're insane not to believe in evolution, because evolution is happening now. Like, you know, it happens over millions of years, but it also happens over thousands and even hundreds of years. And a really good place to study it for scientists and for doubters is islands. I mean, the idea of natural selection was created by studying the Galapagos Islands, which had several species that existed nowhere else on the Earth. So they were like kind of a snapshot of evolution in one place
do love this topic, by the way. Micro and macro evolutionary biology is one of my favorites.
It's so connected with micro and macroeconomics too, you know. Hey, can you explain micro and macroeconomics for our listeners?
Very briefly, microeconomics refers to the actual economics between identified parties, actual, you know, transactions.
That's microeconomics?
That's micro, basically.
Like, like you buying a parrot from your neighbor to cook for dinner for you and your girlfriend.
Like us making a deal so that a transaction happens and then all this equipment, audio equipment shows up over here.
Yeah, that's like you and I did. Yeah.
Right. But then there's macroeconomics, and that's where, you know, the whole GDP of the entire nation of Tonga is,
or the world,
like, compared, or the whole world is compared to the whole world,
or the city of Casper, Wyoming.
Right. And then you have, you know, these supply, demand, price, and you know, quantity, like little charts, and these strange abstract ideas that are taken literally by many economics students or aficionados. It's really bizarre, including the whole, you know, broken window fallacy.
Which is bad. Yeah.
Which
the broken window fallacy is the idea that broken windows create jobs, wars create prosperity, blah, 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 when in fact, those things create bubbles. It's funny, the people that say Bitcoin and Bitcoin are bubbles are the same people who will say to you, because they heard it in kindergarten and haven't really studied why it's not true, they'll say, oh, war stimulates the economy. No, war borrows money from your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and spends it now. It's a Ponzi scheme. And you know what is another Ponzi scheme? By force is Social Security. And that's going to end someday, and the people at the end of the chain are going to get messed over.
We'll be back with Fiends Redemption.
Yeah.
Words.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains, because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Oh, my atomic clock off. I need to sync it. I think it's off 1 second. Here, I'll press the sync button. To sync my atomic clock, I have to put it in my front window, facing Denver.
Freedom Fiend.
Facing the Mecca, facing the Mecca of Denver, because it's actually Colorado City or something like that, like where the government time transmitter is with the atomic clock. And I live in a stone house. I live in a brick house, which you really should, because when the poop hits the fan, you know, your windows won't stop bullets, but your brick house will with most bullets. But it also stops radio waves. So I have to face Denver with this clock to let it sink. So after the show, it seems to be off by 2 seconds. So I'll put it in the front window. So we got a bunch of redemption. Let's see. There's some interesting redemption. So I'm reading an article that says scientists warn we may be creating a digital dark age. And what this premise is that in 400 years, it's possible that there will be more record of the last century than of this century, because books can have a longer shelf life than digital data. But that's why I publish, you know, like we published a Biptunia or Philtunia, which is Biptunia with Phil Warmoth, recently published a printed chapbook of Freedom Fiends lyrics, of Biptunia lyrics. Hey, did you know, this is kind of fun, so Austrian economics is the kind of economics we're talking about, the real economics as opposed to the broken window theory, government economics. And my saying is that a 10-year-old running a lemonade stand knows more about Austrian economics and real economics than a PhD in the other kind of economics, you know, government economics. Which is what you learn in most colleges, unless you go to George Mason in D.C. or a few other places. But
there's an expression, you know, like that if your salary depends upon you not understanding something, then, well, probably you're not going to understand it.
Give me an example of jobs like that.
Okay, just say the economics professor with a PhD, and they need to continue to, say, explain how the broken window creates jobs for people.
Right.
And if their, you know, salary depended on them not understanding how them being paid by force, you know, is
really they'd be,
part of,
right, you know. In the real world, that guy would probably be washing dishes if the government didn't exist. Although, you know, if he's a really good teacher, I think really good, like teachers worry about, without the government, we'd all be homeless. I think without the government, crappy teachers would be homeless. I think without the government, good teachers would be paid by groups of parents to come over and do the homeschooling for them.
So it's part of the redemption, and you can't stop Fiend's redemption.
Yeah.
Just this is a meritocratous world in general.
What does that
people
mean?
Want. People want things that are effective and have merit. You know, like that a meritocracy is the rule by those with the most skill or merit.
Right.
Know? That kind of thing.
Which is why school doesn't matter anymore, because school trains you, you know, the way the Prussian model of having kids sit in neat little rows and show up at the same place at the same time and you know, be the slave to a clock and not really learn to think, but learn to memorize rote and recite rote things and to obey was created to create compliant soldiers and factory workers, and soldiers being replaced by robots very quickly. Oh, there's a terrifying robot Blackbeard. It's the one that's in black and white. It's called Metalhead. It's all I'm going to say. It has nothing to do with music. It's great.
But,
it's great.
But, you know, like all these things just show examples of how things are getting better. I mean, you know, ever since I made this hair doll of you, Michael, it's just, you know.
Threw it in the volcano. Yeah.
It really helped, like, bring things together that now California has allegedly legal marijuana.
Pot. Yeah, it's legal and regulated. Okay. I mean, you can't just grow 40 acres in downtown San Francisco and get away with it. You have to, you know, partner with the government in the form of paying tribute as a permit and taxes. But yeah, I didn't even know about this. As I saw, like, last night, I saw a headline in my newsfeed, like, you know, legal marijuana begins in 1 hour in California. I'm like, what? I knew they had medical, but. And, you know, this is kind of interesting. The reason it took years to get it legal, they actually had votes on it, which is kind of interesting. Like, they had a vote to legalize marijuana. And it was like, you know, the first year it was like, you know, 54% in favor of keeping it illegal, you know. And then it was like 52%, then 51%, then 49%. So, like, then it finally passed. The reason, like, old people had to die off. And the police unions just got less and less powerful, meow, because the police unions were trying to keep it illegal. And the reason they like to do it is it's an easy bust. It's easier than busting a meth head or a, you know, alcoholic. They're going to stab you and then vomit in the car on the way to the police station. Pot users are compliant and are easy to arrest and they're easy to catch because there's a smell, even with edibles. And, yeah, cops love to bust potheads. So, good for California. You're messed up in every other way. And it'd be a beautiful state, beautiful, physically beautiful state without all the Californians. But, hey, they legalized weed.
Yeah, and worldwide poverty is down at an all-time low across the world. Just saying.
Because of capitalism. Worms.
Worms.